Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, send it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, before we do get started, I want to let you know that today's program is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners. Thanks so much for your support. Well, now it's time to begin a new Yours Truly Johnny Dollar series, The Long Shot Matter, Parts 1 and 2.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Welcome to Hollywood, Mr. Dollar. This is Daryl.
Daryl?
Jim Daryl. Daryl and Clark Insurance. We wrote up the Palm Quiz policy.
Oh, that Daryl. For a minute, I thought maybe...
Yeah, everyone does. About the policy. Understand you're worried about it.
National Underwriters is. They asked me to take a look.
Come on over and help yourself. It's a simple enough policy. $100,000 coverage on both Dr. Carl Palmquist and his wife.
It's that double indemnity clause I'm interested in. Becomes effective the end of this week, doesn't it?
That's right. Why? What's wrong?
An anonymous letter sent to underwriters. Kind of hints that somebody's going to try to collect...
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to National Underwriters Association, 1180 River Road, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the long shot matter. Expense account item 1, $174.90, airfare and incidentals to Hollywood, California. A good night's sleep at the Beverly Hilton Hotel and in the morning sunshine, Hartford slush was only a clammy memory. Nobody walks in California, so when in Rome... Item 2, $2 even. Cab fare to Daryl and Clark Insurance Brokers. Beverly Hills. Where else?
Come on in, Dollar. Won't be a minute. Grab a chair.
One look at the furnishings, and you knew a lot of insurance was sold here. It takes a flock of premiums to pay for the really good modern, the long, clean, functional stuff. Impressive. Jim Daryl was even more so, and I'd have bet that 90% of his policyholders were women. He seemed to be doing two things at once, shaving and keeping track of passers-by in the street outside. I watched him glance quickly out the window for the fifth time, smile happily, then make a check mark on a desk pad. I give up. What is it?
Electric shaver.
I mean the bit outside the window.
Oh, it's this year's version of counting license plates.
You playing alone?
Uh-uh. With Clark, my partner. You see, he takes charcoal gray suits and I take Bermuda shorts, based on strictly how many pass the window. The other side of the street doesn't count. Loser buys lunch.
Where's Clark?
Seeing a prospect. We play on the honor system.
Mr. Darrell.
There, that's better. Yeah, Palmquist policy, huh? You want to know about it?
Well, you sound reluctant.
It's delicate.
So is this letter.
Look into Palmquist policy. You may have to pay off soon. Nice corny touch there. Letters from a magazine pasted on to form the message.
Well, the style's a little old hat, but the meaning's clear enough. You want to fill me in?
The Palmquist, Mr. Dollar, the last of one of our oldest families out here. Name, social position, money. They've got it all. That's why I'm not too impressed with this little, communique.
You were telling me about the family.
Palmquist's a doctor, an important one. Sixtish, to the manner born. Complete with iron gray hair and distinguished bearing. A knows-what-he-wants type of man. Has a tremendous practice and still finds time to go hunting about 2 months out of every year.
And his wife?
Invalid, confined to the house. A huge house, by the way, out near the beach. And there's a son, Eric, 25, who lives with him. That's the family.
About the policy, Daryl?
Simple enough. $100,000 straight coverage on both Dr. Palmquist and his wife.
And the beneficiaries?
Only one, the son, Eric.
For both?
For both. That's a pretty pointed grunt.
Why not? I was thinking of the double indemnity clause that'll be effective in a few days.
That's what I thought you were thinking.
Well, let me have a couple of addresses, will you? The house at the beach and Palmquist's office.
Sure. The office is only a few blocks from here. And, Dollar, please be tactful, will you? Those premiums, they're so lovely.
The way to make sure they keep coming is to keep people healthy.
Yeah, I guess you have some. Hey, what do you know? Another one.
What?
Bermuda shorts. Oh. That puts me three up. Clark's going to scream like an eagle when he pays that lunch check. Today we eat at Romanoff's.
I walked the 4 or 5 blocks to Dr. Carl Palmquist's office. It was easy to find. You just look for the most expensive building in the most expensive part of Beverly Hills, or as the natives sometimes call it, Lootville. As I turned into the entrance, a young executive type brushed past me on the street. Suit? Charcoal gray. I hoped he wouldn't pass Daryl's window. Dr. Palmquist's office was all it should be. Tasteful, quietly lush, the kind of place that made you wonder why he didn't live right there. The nurse who came forward did nothing to destroy the thought. Blonde, complete with doe eyes, retrousé nose, and a figure that floated. Great medicine for the sick.
May I help you?
I'd like to see the doctor.
Do you have an appointment, Mr.?
Dollar, Johnny Dollar. No, I haven't.
Dr. Palmquist isn't in right now.
Well, what time will he be back?
Well, he has a 4:30 appointment.
Suppose I show at 5, then, Miss...
Lund. Steffi Lund.
Miss Lund. 5?
I can't promise anything, but you might try.
Oh, I will. I'll try like mad. Expense account item 3, $38 even. Deposit and first day's rental on a drive-it-yourself car. And driving it out along Sunset Boulevard was delightful. I had no trouble at all getting into the California spirit. I pretended that I was a movie producer going home to his starlet wife. I found the Palmquist house on a quiet dead-end street high on the Palisades overlooking the Pacific. Daryl was right. It was huge, a single-story farmhouse that seemed to ramble endlessly. Well, it was a long way to come for nothing. I walked around the side of the house. Nobody tried to stop me. I moved through an open breezeway and wished that somebody had, because suddenly I felt like an intruder. Because of the woman sitting in the wheelchair, staring vacantly down at the swimming pool that sparkled in the sunlight. Because of the way she poured a drink from the bottle beside her without ever looking at it. Because of the way she held the glass, as though she wanted you to believe it was sarsaparilla tea, not whiskey.
It isn't really medicine, you know. I only pretend that it is.
Yeah, sure. Look, I didn't mean to barge in like this. Mrs. Palmquist?
Victor says it's disgusting. Calls it a sign of weakness. Do you feel that way, young man?
Well, nobody does anything without a reason. My name is Dollar, Mrs. Palmquist, and, well, I'd like to talk to you for a little while, if you feel up to it.
Weakness. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, it's...
Very sorry. Victor wouldn't like that either. Would you mind wheeling me into the house, young man? I'm very tired.
Oh, yeah, sure thing. You just relax. She leaned back in the chair and closed her eyes. She wasn't sleeping, just somewhere off in thoughts of her own. I pushed the chair toward the house as gently as I could. It wasn't until we almost reached it that I realized we had an audience, a good-looking kid in his mid-20s watching us from a bedroom window. A kid who didn't want to be seen, the way he jumped back from the window told me that. It was getting pretty weird out. Inside the house, I wheeled Mrs. Palmquist into a large living room. Gently, patiently, I tried to get her to answer a few questions, but I got nowhere. She wasn't rude, just secretive, smiling, and very far away. I was wondering how to get out gracefully when...
I'm so very sorry. I'm afraid I haven't been very attentive, have I, Mr. Dollar?
Suddenly, just as clear and lucid as that, I looked around to see what had made this almost magical change, and he was standing just inside the room, the kid I'd seen watching from the window.
Eric, come here, dear. This is my son, Eric. I'm afraid I've forgotten where you told me you were from, Mr. Dollar.
My mother's been ill, Mr. Dollar. She's not supposed to be disturbed.
Oh, now, Eric.
Oh, I am sorry. I was just leaving.
Good. I'll show you the way out.
Oh.
Maybe that would be best. You'll come back again, Mr. Dollar, when I'm feeling better.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Please make it soon. I don't seem to keep very good track of time. Another sign of weakness, I suppose.
Well, I...
When you show Mr. Dollar out, please come back, Paul.
Oh, yes, Mother.
You're a good son, Paul.
This way, Mr. Dollar. What do you want here? You can see she isn't well.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't take you long to go from Eric to Paul, did it?
She is not insane. You hear, Mr. Dollar?
I didn't say she was. Now, why did she call you Paul?
Paul was my older brother. He died 3 years ago. That's part of why she's like she is. A small part.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Nobody's asking you to be. Just don't come back here.
I had plenty of time to kill before 5 o'clock, and a lot of things would have been pleasant. Sopping up the Malibu sun, watching the kids on the beach, you name it. But instead, I settled for a visit with an old friend, Lieutenant Barry, homicide. I wasn't just being social. Pretty sneaky, as a matter of fact. The anonymous note which underwriters had received intrigued Barry, and he promised to have it gone over by the police lab. At 5 on the dot, I was back in Dr. Palmquist's office.
A punctual sort of patient, Mr. Dollar.
Yeah, I used to get gold stars for it at school.
Well, I'm afraid Dr. Palmquist doesn't get one. He called just a little while after you left this morning.
Oh?
Said to cancel all appointments for today that he wouldn't be in. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so am I.
I would have called you, but I didn't know where to reach
you. Oh, sure, that's okay. What about tomorrow?
I can give you an appointment at 10. How's that?
I'll be here. Thanks.
Mr. Dollar, would you like to give me some information now?
Like what?
Medical history, previous illnesses, complaints, the usual thing. Saves time in the morning.
Well, why don't we wait till tomorrow, in case Dr. Palmquist decides to play hooky again. There's one nice thing about this job. You get around so much you learn to pick up local habits without even thinking about it. For instance, that evening, I had a leisurely dinner, then took in an endless double feature, all without ever once getting out of my car. Drive-ins, you know. It was well after midnight when I got back to my hotel, feeling a kinship for bus drivers everywhere. I headed across the lobby, ran smack into Jim Darrell as I rounded the cigar stand.
Dollar, where have you been?
Well, hi, Darrell. Hey, who wound up paying for lunch?
Listen, I've been trying to get hold of you all night. Where were you?
Dinner, a movie, the wildlife, huh? Well, don't look that unhappy. I didn't do anything illegal.
Somebody did.
What? Hey, what is it, Darrell? What are you talking about?
Mrs. Palmquist. Dead. Shot to death. A couple of hours ago.
Johnny Dollar.
Johnny, Lieutenant Barry, homicide. Got messages from you 3 inches thick.
Yeah, been trying to get hold of you all morning.
Well, it hasn't exactly been a social tea around here, you know. What with the murder of Dr. Palmquist's wife.
Can I come down there to headquarters?
Come ahead, and if you're a good boy, I'll introduce you to the man who did the killing.
What?
Of course, he denies it completely. Who wouldn't? But will you hear his story? It's a wild one.
Hold it. You're way ahead of me. You're saying you've got the killer there?
That's what I'm saying.
Well... who is he?
You wouldn't know him. Nobody seems to.
Make a little sense, will you, Lieutenant?
Look, you coming down or not?
Right now. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Los Angeles, California, to National Underwriters Association, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the long shot matter. Los Angeles traffic being what it is, there was plenty of time to think on the way to Barry's office. But think about what? An unsigned warning that someone was going to collect on a $100,000 policy? A frail, defeated woman who wasn't going to have to worry about weakness anymore. There was an awful lot to find out before this whole thing could begin to make sense. That was pretty obvious. The man I was going to see was anything but obvious. Big and round, he was like a fat Cupid doll with a gun. You always had the feeling his round little eyes were dreaming past you, seeing an island where there was no jail cells. A lot of cons had made that mistake, found out too late that Barry was as sharp as any homicide cop alive. Life is like that, huh, Johnny? Yesterday your visit was social, today it's business. Yeah, just one dead woman can make a lot of difference. Sit down.
Like I said, I'm way behind you. How did it happen? When?
Sit down. I can't talk when you're standing. Okay. Santa Monica substation got the call about 9 last night from Dr. Palmquist. He was real excited, said he was holding a rifle on a prowler who'd come in and shot and killed his wife. So we got out there fast.
Wait a minute. Did the doctor know?
Let me tell it my way, huh?
Okay.
We found Mrs. Palmquist dead on the living room floor, and the doctor's still holding this guy at rifle point. 38 Colt lay in a corner with nobody paying much attention to it. Ballistic says it's the murder weapon, all right.
What's the doctor's story?
Says he was out on a house call, got home a couple of minutes before 9. On the way to the front door, he glanced through the living room window, saw this prowler holding a gun on Mrs. Palmquist. The doctor got into the house quietly and was sneaking up from behind when the prowler heard him and got rattled. The prowler fired and killed the woman just as the doc brought a paperweight down on his head. Nice, huh?
A little out of left field. Funny, I always thought prowlers and gunmen are two different things.
Nothing says it can't happen, and the evidence says it did.
What does that mean?
That this is one prowler who's sewn up tight, because everything checks out. The .38 is his prints are on it. Lab found the lock he forced to get in. What else you want, a moving picture?
Oh, don't get mad, don't get mad. I'm just asking. Now, that house call the doctor was out on, I'm a stranger in town, but isn't that kind of a late hour to see a patient, unless it's a real emergency?
Not when they look like this one.
Oh?
I checked with her this morning. She could make me go to medical school right now, even at this age.
Nice, huh?
Put it this way. Her first name ought to be Marilyn.
Well, that's pretty clear. Who is she?
A Mrs. Laura Considine. 35, widow, money, and everyone should look like that.
She been Dr. Palmquist's patient long?
3 or 4 years, and she backs up the story of the house call completely. You sold?
I want to know about the prowler. Who is he?
Ex-con, drifter, 57 years old, got a record that goes way back.
What kind of record?
I was afraid you'd ask, because that's the fly in the ointment. It's a long sheet and it's buried. Bunko, con game, badger, bad checks, pigeon drop, all small stuff. But not an ounce of violence anywhere.
A killing's way out of pattern, isn't it?
Yeah.
This prowler, what does he claim?
It's so wild I'm embarrassed to repeat it.
How's chances of my seeing him? Maybe he'll tell me. Barry took me upstairs to what they call the hotshot section. A very exclusive floor, this one, because the cells hold only prisoners suspected of the big rap, murder. And you know something? I never heard a place like this, but what an old fallacy comes bouncing back into my mind, that bit about being able to tell a man's character by looking at him. What does a murderer look like? Go ahead, put yourself out on that limb, but don't drag me out there with you. Because the man sitting quietly in cell 8A looked about as hard and dangerous as a Victorian antimacassar. Lonnie Miller, prowler and murder suspect. Lonnie Miller, gray-haired, tall and slim, a man with good straight bearing even while he sat. Yet, with a delicacy about him. Or maybe it was just the natural good manners of the born con man. I didn't know.
Yell when you want out, Johnny.
Yeah.
I'm not going to change the story. I'll tell it again, but it'll be the same. Is that what you want, officer?
I'm not the police, Miller. My name is Dollar. I'm an insurance investigator.
It's a little late for me to buy insurance, isn't it?
Miller, you don't have to talk to me if you don't want to, but you'd be helping yourself if you told me the truth.
They didn't believe me. Not one word. Why would you?
My jobs are different. My interest is in the insurance angle. Did you kill Mrs. Palmquist?
I'm nearly 60, mister, and I've done everything in the book, almost everything. But I never killed. Never. I can't make them see that.
Yeah, I know.
Told them 100 times, word for word, step by step. They just sit and look at me. Well, what do I have to do to make them believe I didn't do it?
From what I hear, they've got an awful lot of evidence that says you did.
You too, huh? Go away, mister. You may be a little different kind of cop. You're talking like all the others. You're thinking like them. Let me alone.
You haven't got much chance, Miller, if that's your only answer to evidence.
Evidence? I know all about that stuff. You can buy it and sell it, manufacture it, make it stand up and do tricks. The cops...
Miller, you're talking through your hat. You've been the route. Do you know one case where the police ever manufactured evidence? And I don't mean con talk. I mean one you actually know of.
Oh, what's the difference?
Look, why don't you tell me about it?
Think you could listen without sneering? Nobody else can.
Try me, huh? Now, how did you get into this?
I just finished doing time in San Diego. been hitchhiking my way up from there. 4 nights ago, a truck let me off on the Pacific Coast Highway, about 15 miles south of L.A. A few minutes later, a man in a big cab gave me a lift. Nice enough fella. A little nosy about where I was from, where I was going, things like that. But nice.
Yeah, go on.
After about 5 minutes, he decided we needed coffee, so we stopped at a little tacos joint. 10 minutes later, we were back on the road. After about 2 miles, he said it felt like we had a flat, so he stopped. It was a flat, all right, left rear.
So?
Well, he had given me the lift. The least I could do was to change his tire, so I did it. He was real friendly the rest of the way. He told me to stick around town and he'd see I got a job. He gave me a 20. Told me where to get a room and said to wait for him to phone. He said his name was Carter.
You do what he said?
Last night he called me. Said to be at his house at 9 sharp to meet a man who had a job for me, an address in the Palisades.
Well, go on.
The house was dark when I got there, so I rang the bell. Someone opened the door. I took one step inside and got hit on the head. Next thing I know, I'm coming to on the living room floor. There's a dead woman a few feet away. And my friend Carter's holding a rifle at my head, threatening to blow it off if I move. Only when the cops got there, they didn't call him Carter, but Dr. Palmquist.
Palmquist? Miller, do you realize what you're saying?
I know. And every word of it's the truth. Now tell me this, mister. How do I get anyone to believe it?
Miller sat there quietly, looking first at his burning cigarette, then at me. It was as though he didn't expect either one of us to believe him. I was glad to get out of there.
Well, I'll say this much for Miller, Johnny. He's got that story down pat. He didn't tell you one word that he hasn't been telling us.
Lieutenant, does Dr. Palmquist know what Miller claims?
We haven't discussed it. Didn't I tell you the doctor's resting at Blair Hospital for a day or so, shock of his wife's death?
Do you intend to tell him?
Look, I know you're a fellow who automatically roots for the underdog, but face it, boy, what have I got? An ex-con with a wild story against a respected citizen with a perfect alibi. I'd look kind of silly questioning Palmquist at the moment.
At the moment? Does that mean you've got doubts about Palmquist?
I doubt everybody till the last page, boy. That's how I got to be a lieutenant.
And that's where we left it. I had a long, thoughtful lunch, which included 2 very dry martinis aimed at helping solve a new problem. To wit, how best to arrange a few words with a hospitalized Dr. Palmquist at such a delicate time. In the end, I did the only thing I could, walked into room 913 at Blair Hospital and introduced myself. Dr. Palmquist didn't seem at all surprised by the visit. He seemed annoyed, if anything, but the annoyance was with himself.
I'm not a very good advertisement for my own profession at the moment, am I, Mr. Dollar?
I'm sorry to intrude, Doctor. I probably could have picked a better time for a visit.
You've been doing your best.
What?
Which do you prefer, Mr. Dollar, my office or my home? Would you like the names of a few friends? Perhaps they can tell you whatever it is you're trying to find out about me.
It's my job, Doctor.
And just what is your job, Mr. Dollar?
Insurance investigator. For the company that holds the policy on Mrs. Palmquist and yourself.
I see. Then you can stop running around now, can't you? You can simply go to the police and they'll tell you anything you want to know.
Doctor, may I...
Mr. Dollar, I don't usually prescribe without a thorough examination, Bob.
Please do.
Very well. I don't think California is your cup of tea. I suggest another climate entirely.
The visit was over. Palmquist lay back against the pillows, no longer interested, and I turned to leave. Just as I was reaching for the door, it opened, and one of the most beautiful women I'd ever seen started into the room.
I think you have the wrong room, madam.
For a moment, she just stood there, startled. Then, without a word, she turned and hurried out. But not before I'd gotten a good look at the large block initials on the purse she carried, L.C. The 2 letters plus the way she looked made Laura Considine a pretty good bet. Nice twist, huh? The doctor is ill, and the patient comes to call. You can't trust anybody these days, can you?
No. Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, beauty may be skin deep, but fear goes a lot further down than that. Sometimes as far as death. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Tony Barrett, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, the solution seems somewhat obvious at this point, but we may be in kind of an inverted mystery here, with Johnny trying to figure out how to prove the ex-con's story true, which I think is definitely a challenge. Interesting note here, Tony Barrett as writer of the story, Tony Barrett, of course, well-known as a character actor, played a lot of villains, I think, on Let George Do It and many other detective shows, and, of course, played the role of the indispensable Mark Donovan, taking a turn at writing. And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. There was definitely a greater opportunity to write radio just because so many of the established writers were going to television, and it cost quite a bit to lure them to do radio writing. By the way, I should mention that I do have a new microphone I'm recording with. I got a wireless microphone for Christmas, and I'm trying it out for the first time in these couple episodes. Certainly, I'm going to ask Andrew Rhines to keep a listen to it and provide some feedback, but your feedback is welcome as well as to how the new mic's working. But that will do it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with Mr. Chameleon, and next week, you won't want to miss it. We're going to open up the casebook of Gregory Hood. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.